Bill, thanks for coming on Channel 9. Appreciate it. You're transitioning away from Microsoft as full-time chief software architect. You're going to be the chairman. When did you make that decision? How hard of a decision was that to make, and what exactly is your new role?
Well, it was 8 years ago when Steve Ballmer took over as CEO of the company. And that was a transition for me to move from being in charge of basically everything, the business decisions, the org chart, the tax strategies, whatever it was, to being able to focus just on the product strategy. And that worked out fantastically. The company's done extremely well, grown our research group, grown our innovation. And so that partnership Steve and I have had has been amazing. It was about 3 years ago I talked to Steve about how I wanted to get more time for the foundation. And in that conversation, we talked about, okay, let's make sure we've got incredible people that are stepping up to do what I did. We wanted to make it public early on, so it was actually 2 years ago that we announced that this would take place. We highlighted the role that Ray Ozzie would take on as chief software architect, the role that Craig Mundie would take on, having the research group report in through him, and the community of technical fellows. Partly because of my visibility, the incredible work that a lot of these people do, where they're the real experts in database or security or the different things, I think this is an opportunity for people to see how important their role is and how brilliant their work is. And so now the 2 years is up, the day is coming, and we're making the change.
Absolutely. Are you nervous? I mean, you've only ever worked at Microsoft, right?
That's right. I was about 17 when I first started writing the BASIC, and all my work every day has been focused on Microsoft. So this will be a change to get up in the morning and most of the days be focused in on the foundation work. And the foundation, in some ways, is a lot smaller. The goals are very ambitious. The areas are different. So I'm not sure how easy it will be to make the change. I'll certainly miss the spending full time at Microsoft because I love the smart people there. I love how the research gets into products. I love the feedback we get when we do something wrong, people tell us. When we do something right, people tell us. The world of software is a world of great change. I'm hoping that in some of these issues of helping the poor, we can get the pace of change to be like it's been with software at Microsoft.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about CSA, the Chief Software Architect role, and where and why you chose Ray Ozzie. I know you guys are friends. Clearly, he's brilliant. But can we talk a little bit about how that decision came across to say Ray will be my replacement as CSA plus Craig Mundie, and I guess they'll share responsibilities, something along those lines. Let's talk about that. And what does a Chief Software Architect really do? Are you a neutral arbiter?
Well, the key thing is that getting the technical groups to work well together, to take unified bets, and make sure that what we're offering is very coherent, that's the center of the job. The way I did the job was connected with my history of the company and the breadth of things I like to do. Ray will probably do the job in a different way, but he's the one who's going to make sure that the technical pieces come together. I've known Ray forever. He worked on VisiCalc, he worked on Symfony, then he did Notes, then he did Groove. Throughout the entire time I knew Ray, he was the one outside the company who gave us the best advice about what we should do with our tools and our platform. And many times, Steve Ballmer and I went to Ray and said, geez, is there any way we could get you at Microsoft? And so we were thrilled when there was the chance to not only hire Ray, but also bring the team he'd had at Groove and the work they had done there, bring that into Microsoft. And so that's been a huge success for us. Ray's been at Microsoft almost 3 years now. Time goes very quickly. And so he's gotten to know the people. He gets much more in depth on the things he spends time on. This web services thing, he's really leading the charge and knows exactly what we're doing. He's also drawing on the technical community in some new ways, making sure they step up and take their areas, whether it's database or modeling or different things, that they're really taking charge and are working with him in a team-like way. And so he's got a different approach, but I think for this era of Microsoft, it's going to be the one that works. And, you know, it's amazing how smart these people are. And they, you know, all want our software to do well. And so with raised leadership, we'll keep making breakthroughs.
Outstanding. So you started the Think Week program, which was a way for you to actually learn about in detail some of the innovations and thinking that's going on. Some of it a little crazy, some of it actually turned into products at some point. What's going to happen to Think Week when you leave?
Yeah, we have a variety of things that are about driving that innovation agenda. You know, you've got to have products plans where every 2 or 3 years you do major releases, and those plans have to be very realistic. You know, taking things that are fairly well proven, going after them, and, you know, getting a lot of things done in a very predictable way. But you also want to have a vision of where it's all going. What is the ultimate thing you'd like to do for developers, for the data center, for the information worker? And so we've created a variety of things, including Think Week. The Quest process is one that David Vaskovich and Ray worked together on. That is that ultimate dream that's not tied to a schedule, but instead it's where do we want to go? And then we can compare, are we moving in that direction? And what software work do we need to get to kind of the ultimate, you know, the office where the whiteboard is smart and you can access information just very, very easily, sort of the old information at your fingertips dream brought to life. Think Week played a unique role in that it let people throughout the company, whether it was the field, wherever they were, submit ideas they thought were interesting. And then I would go through and look at a lot of those papers and make sure that they were copied to the right people, make some comments myself. This last Think Week, we got over 300. I commented on about 130 myself. But we took and used a SharePoint application to make it a community activity. And so there were comments, way more comments by people other than myself. And so we're going to try to make that into an ongoing tradition where the technical community, particularly the technical fellows and distinguished engineers or VPs who run product groups, where they're up there commenting typically on 20 to 40 papers each. And so people get a sense that no matter what their idea is, it's being looked at. If it's really good, then it gets shepherded to the right group. And, you know, maybe they'll even join that group and help make it a reality.
Excellent. Because Microsoft is such a large and complicated, complex. It's also complicated. You have all these really smart people across the company innovating. How are you going to ensure that we can be as agile as we need to be? Because it seems like we need to be a little more agile than we usually are. But innovation takes time. So how do you, because you were always great at making sure people would communicate or things would bubble up to you. Ray's going to have to do that now. But let's talk a little bit about the enhanced role of distinguished engineers and technical fellows as you transition out.
Well, these are an incredible group of people. It's you know, greats of the industry like Butler Lamson, Dave Cutler, people who came to Microsoft like Amitabh Srivastava. You know, it's dangerous to start naming them because they're all really quite amazing. You know, and I loved working with them all. I think their ideas will get more visibility with me not being there, and I think that's a very healthy thing. You know, we'll get them out more in public. We'll get them writing up the things they're working on. Ray will make sure it's got a certain coherence to it. But you'll see those people stepping up and able to drive some of these activities. One thing to keep in mind is that we do have Microsoft Research. So in terms of the things that are the most ambitious, you know, those groups which have grown, we just added a Boston lab, it's a worldwide group, they're doing some frontier things, and they use a lot of innovative approaches, including what they call Tech Fest, where people come in and see demonstrations from all those different researchers. So that's kind of seeding new ideas into the product groups. You've got the Quest, which is the long-term agenda. You've got research with their advances. And then within the product groups, you have lots of incubations taking place. And then that big product schedule, which is what you're really going to get done and where all the pieces come together. So I think those are the elements. Making sure that we take some risky bets, that we have the right unification so we're not duplicating things. You know, that's where all this IQ comes to bear.
Sure.
You know, brilliant people who want it to work well. Sometimes they'll get a better perspective for that by going out into the field, coming to events like TechEd or the PDC, where the in the breakouts people can give them a key feedback for those things. And so that's the kind of mechanism that keeps us on track, keeps us healthy. When we see a product that's not well received, boy, are we paying attention to that. We're a very self-critical culture. And so I don't have much doubt people will keep these things on track. We've had a few releases. We've tried to do too much. We learned a lot from that. We've got some of the scale that we do, particularly in Windows, makes it one of the most complex, but the most important software project ever. In Windows 7, we're doing things in a bit of a different way that are clearly letting us be a great deal more agile.
Fantastic. Well, you mentioned Windows. And so really, you know, it's the era we seem to be in software for services, and everyone's talking about, you know, interacting with the cloud, cloud computing, whatever you want to call it. What is the future of Windows? Where does Windows fit in, especially for developers? I mean, when we think about our strategy and the way we look at the future in the cloud. So that's really what I want to know about. It's like, what are your thoughts on Windows?
Well, Windows is where the big things are going to happen. The 3D interaction, the speech, the pen, the vision. The Microsoft Surface is just Windows with a camera and some software sitting on top of Windows, and that'll go down into the platform itself. And so as you write an application, you'll write to Windows. Now, things like the storage will, without you having to write special code for it, that'll be automatically replicated up to the cloud. And so as you move from Windows device to Windows device, or even moving onto a phone, your data will be available because of that cloud service. As you want to authenticate yourself, understanding who the groups of people you work with or your personal preferences, that stuff will come down out of the cloud. So there'll be a lot of things going on in Windows where you get the best of both worlds. You can sit and edit the photos. Those photos come quickly off of your disk. You can be offline and do all that work. But then as you connect back up, it will synchronize up. Those things will go up. They can be shared in the right ways, backed up in the right ways. And so Windows is what's driving those cloud services. And yet developers can get the benefit of those while just focusing in on what is the kind of rich interaction they want to provide. We see that, say, in gaming with Xbox Live. You still want that great game that's got the logic on the machine, but you want to see what your friends are up to, connect up to them, share with them. A great example of how rich client and services can come together.
Excellent. So the other thing to think about right now is ManyCore. So I wanted to get your thoughts on this whole parallelism story. And again, looking at the client, because developers are going to have to take advantage of 80 cores. And right now, quite frankly, they can't in an elegant way. So what are your thoughts on the future of ManyCore?
Well, ManyCore will change both the server and the client. The chip companies have run into the problem that even though they can keep increasing the number of transistors, they can't double the clock speed, that the amount of heat that would be given off is just impossible to dissipate. And so they're saying to us, hey, here's the good news. You're going to have a lot of parallel processing. Now, that's a famous problem in computer science, is to take what is a single-threaded thing that runs at, say, speed 10 and try to run it on 10 processors at speed 1. And so we've really put a lot of our research work and our product development work into two approaches. One is to take the level of runtime in the system, the way we do 3D for you, the way we do modeling for you, the way we do physics for you, and make those such a high-level API that it's our problem to implement them so that they execute in parallel. So your runtime in the OS itself, in the platform, will be parallelized. Then, for your piece of the execution time, making it easy for you to write code that can be run in parallel. Link is a great example of this, where you take that iteration concept and say, okay, each of those iterations can be run across different processors. Now, it's going to take more than that. Historically, writing code that it runs in parallel, debugging it so it's right, making sure that you're getting that performance capability, it's been very difficult to do that. And so it's a frontier that takes all the things that Microsoft is good at, our research group, the fact we write these popular tools, the fact we write the platform, and forces us to bring them together in collaboration with the chip companies, understanding what they're going to bring forward, and invent new capabilities so that parallel programming is easy. This is going to roll out over these next 5 years and become a very key focus. And it's probably more challenging than even these changes we've had in the address space, where we went from 1 meg to the 286, the 386 now to 64-bit. This is pretty fundamental to how state-of-the-art applications get written. And we're already out there with some tools, but we have a lot of work to do to make this something that's easy for developers.
Absolutely. So, and again, talking about developers, I mean, do you think software engineering will ever truly become a composable engineering enterprise when you think about engineering in the context of, say, mechanical engineering, all of these where you can build on top of one another, remove one piece and not break the whole house, right? I can remodel my kitchen, don't have to destroy my house to do that. Software still seems to be so complicated. I'm just wondering, I know Craig Mondays thinks along those lines to some degree. What are your thoughts on the composition aspect of software?
Well, there's two big advances that we have to drive. One is that you don't have to think about the details. So the higher level abstraction, that's where modeling comes in. And the second thing is this composability, and they're understanding what the dependencies are between two different things and giving you techniques where you can minimize those dependencies. Core software has some composability today. That's what subroutines are. Mm. Object-oriented programming was just about making subroutines more available. Mm. Services-type programming is just making subroutines available across the entire network. Modeling is taking that and saying that you don't even have to know the insides and the details and being very explicit about what you're dependent on. The fact that we now have some proof tools that can take and say, are there any dependencies that you haven't properly represented? And things like parallelism, what the dependency is there, or new versions of different pieces and how they might interact. Proof techniques will be very important here. And it's great that Microsoft Research has driven those forward. Mm. They came in first sort of in the proving that you didn't have security problems, but the same things are now being used for security and performance and independence things. So yes, we have to make it easier to write big software. We have made progress, it's just that we keep being more ambitious about what software can do.
Yeah.
Historically, the programming backlog was about different reports formatted in new ways that people wanted. Today, of course, you just put the data in the server and give people Excel, they can sit there and format it in any way they want. Very soon, things like the SharePoint collaboration, you won't even turn to your IT department, you'll just have end user ability to take and navigate those things. Data pivots where you're drilling into information. So we take things and make it simple enough for the end user, but then the IT department always has to be at the frontier writing the code that has to do with their particular business. And so letting them do that in a way that they're not redoing the work again and again, that's the holy grail. And I think this next decade we'll have more progress on that than we've had ever before.
Absolutely. So I always wanted to ask, why is search so important to us?
Well, if you take the broad sense of finding information and the tasks you want to get done, of picking a product to buy or figuring out how you want to price things, these things really are key business activities. Search itself, whether it's searching your desktop, searching your business websites, or searching the full web, that's just a piece of those activities. And so when we think of search, we don't just think, okay, give somebody a bunch of links. We think more, help them plan a trip, help them pick a product, help them research a topic. And that's why search today is nowhere near what it will be. And all the great work of Microsoft Research, of language parsing, document understanding, those will come to bear in this area. And it won't just be the web search. You'll also have your own information and history about what you're interested in, the personalization, the specific things about the work you do and the information there that's often confidential that if you have access to, you want that to be mixed in. And so we step back and look at the problem in a broad way. Mm. We do think it's a great software problem and that what's out there now is nowhere near good enough, and that there should be people who are competing for users' loyalty in terms of how they get these tasks done, including the search part of it. And so we put together an incredible team that's doing web search. We've got an incredible team doing the SharePoint search, including the fast team that came and joined us. We have great things on the desktop. This is one of the few areas where people say, you know, what will Microsoft get done? They sort of see us as a underdog even.
Yeah.
And that's fun for the team because they'll be able to surprise people. It's actually making us think through things like data centers with millions of servers. That's important to our business customers, the place where we are really preeminent today, thinking through business developers, information workers, the IT needs inside that business environment. The kind of scale that we're bringing from more consumer search activities into that data center design, that is immensely beneficial and really a unique combination that we'll be able to offer. Mm-hmm. And so it's a fun software problem. Mm-hmm. It's very appropriate that not just one company go after and do those things, and particularly with Office and the kind of advanced research we have, you know, we see a chance to move it way faster than it has been.
Excellent. So, I mean, because that was really sort of a lead into the question of, at least from the outside, it seems like we're so focused on competing with Google, to mention the name. Why is that the case? I mean,
well, it's one of the things we're focused on, but it's always surprising to me that there's less attention paid to what we're doing for people at work and how they get things done. Take the phenomenal success of SharePoint over these last 3 years. It's becoming a standard tool that you just build a personal website, you build a project-oriented website, you have your finance or department website, and those all connect together, and users are very familiar with those. Anyway, that's a huge thing. Partly because it's more business-oriented than consumer-oriented, partly because we've been so much out in front on that, it isn't given the same visibility that the fact that Google's in front in search and, you know, will people be able to challenge that? And that whole new advertising model has got people fascinated about how that plays out. So that is, yes, that's important to us. We have a great team there, but it's one of many things we're doing. You know, we're doing modeling, we're doing vision, we're doing breakthrough databases, we're taking Office to a whole new level, as well as doing those search activities. And it's that mix of things and how we integrate them together that really make us unique. We're a platform company.
Yep.
We care about that information worker, but any neat software thing, whether it's software for games or the phone or consumer type search, you'll find us there putting brilliant people on it and taking a long-term approach.
Outstanding. And usually adding some sort of platform component to whatever.
That's right. You haven't seen that in the consumer search yet, but that's definitely one of the things we're working on, is how we can take people who understand particular domains and let them contribute and partner with and share in some of that, the advertising revenue.
Excellent. So this year, 08, is the PDC. And I know that you're very passionate about the PDC. This will be one of the first ones, I believe, that you won't be keynoting. So I just wanted to ask you, I mean, to shout out to developers, and what kind of advice would you give them about our roadmap, and like, what would you say to them? Because a lot of them will be watching this.
Well, PDC, we've got enough stuff that we've saved up for it that I hope people can find the things that are most interest to them. We'll be showing our modeling work there, which will be new and different. We'll be showing the services in the cloud, and Ray is the one really getting up and talking about the big focus for him over these last 3 years, and some things that have been codenamed that I think are really quite amazing, what he and that team have been able to pull together. It's going to be a very big PDC because people are now seeing that, yes, you got web services, but you want to run some code on the client with different ways of doing that. You want to take advantage of natural interface. You want to take these large code bases and be able to work with them in new ways. And the PDC is going to have a lot of opportunities, whether it's for commercial or corporate developers.
Excellent. The PDC has always been about our roadmap, right? This is what's coming down the line, as opposed to like an event like Tech Ed, where this is what's here now. Would you say that that's true?
Yeah, we're more willing to go out into the future and paint that long-term roadmap at PDC. You know, we're always talking about where we're going, and you know, we want to share so that people can make their plans in concert with ours. But the one where we get almost all the top people who are doing the work to come, get involved in those breakout sessions, and really share the dream, that's PDC. It's a special event.
Absolutely. So the last time we talked, you mentioned that you basically had no free time, and you were able to watch 24 sometimes on your treadmill or go down into the trampoline room. Are you going to have a lot more free time now, or are you just going to take all that energy and focus it on your philanthropic endeavors? So are you going to have free time is my question.
Well, I take some time to be with my family or play bridge or things like that. I don't know that I'll get much more because the foundation work is very important. A lot of exciting frontiers there. You know, things like malaria, where I think the science gives us a chance to make big reductions there. A need to orchestrate the rich world to help out the developing world and get the right kind of institutions going there so that whether it's bringing the price of food down or improving the education or our financial services that people have there. Some of that really ties back to software. The cell phone plays a role, the internet, the PC. So my old skill base will be there. But I do think that my schedule will fill up a lot like it has during my years at Microsoft.
Excellent. So on that topic, we don't all have enough money to start a philanthropic enterprise. What would you suggest for the normal people? How can we help? How could we affect change in these areas?
Well, I think everybody should both give time and give some money. I think picking a cause, and there are so many good ones out there, that you develop some expertise in, perhaps involve your spouse or the rest of your family in thinking about it, maybe even someday taking a trip to see what's going on in that area or in that particular cause. I think there's an immense amount that can be done because the internet empowers us now to learn so much more and to see if we're giving money for a wells in a country, did they get done, even communicate a bit with the people who are involved there. And so everyone should recognize the disparity that exists in the world today, but understand we have an opportunity to narrow that and that they should have an involvement. Donating money to a lot of these causes really makes a difference. People need the resources. They need the political sense of telling the politicians that giving aid to poor countries is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And then their time. You know, maybe later in your career that you get more time to do those things. But if you can get the familiarity, you know, whether it's a disease or financial services or agriculture education, whatever it is that you pick, having some expertise and learning about it and having a group that you're doing that with, I think people find that very fulfilling.
Outstanding. Well, I wish you the best of luck and thank you for your support of Channel 9 over the years and for all you've done for the industry. It's just incredible. So thank you.
You bet.
Cheers.
Good talking with you.